Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real. This week's podcast is titled, China's Belt and Road to Nowhere. Moody's Investors Service downgraded China's credit rating recently to A1 from AA3. The rationale being that it expects the financial strength of the economy to erode as GDP growth slows and debt levels continue to pile up. What is Beijing's response to the slowing economy and intractable debt accumulation that was underscored by Moody's? Issue a mountain of new debt in order to pave over 60 countries around the globe. China's One Belt, One Road Initiative, OBOR, seeks to answer the age-old question of what a maniacal communist country does when they have exhausted the building of unproductive assets at home. The answer? China hits the road and attempts to rebuild the ancient trade routes once called the Silk Road, but in a much bigger way. With 52 million new homes built over the last few years that have a 10% occupancy rate, China has truly become masters of the road to nowhere. The OBOR will attempt to connect Asia, Africa, and Europe by land and sea with state-of-the-art trading routes. The belt represents the Silk Road economic belt, a path through Central Asia, Iran, Turkey, and Eastern Europe. The road refers to maritime Silk Road, which winds through South Asia, Africa, and the Mediterranean. The original Silk Road primarily connected China to Rome via the Middle East. During the time of the emperors, the Silk Road was the main path that provided the exchange of goods and cultures connecting otherwise remote and inaccessible areas of the world. Today, modern air transportation has supplanted travel by donkeys, canoes, and camels. And the major challenges of a vibrant trade and commerce in these regions has already been satisfied for the most part. But the lack of genuine free market demand for capital goods or fixed asset investments has never been a deterrent for China. When all is said and done, the modernization of these routes will amount to at least $1.3 trillion, which is 11 times larger than the U.S.-led Marshall Plan after adjusting for inflation. And it is no secret that the Chinese seek to gain the same dominance in these regions as the U.S. did after it rebuilt the war-torn cities of Europe following WW2. The problem for China is that the Marshall Plan was implemented by the United States at a time when the dollar had won the right to enjoy the world's reserve currency status. The U.S. was the world's manufacturing base and had a gold-backed currency that the rest of the world was linked to with alacrity. Therefore, at the time of the Marshall Plan, the world afforded the U.S. a lot of leeway with its fiscal policy. But in the case of China, since it does not have the world's reserve currency, it uses capital controls and currency manipulation to keep the value of the yuan from depreciating significantly. Despite this precarious and dangerous scheme, the two major Chinese banks are jumping feet first into financing some of the poorest countries around the globe with sketchy credit in order for China to play Marco Polo. In 2015, the Chinese state-run China Development Bank, CDB, announced it was setting aside $890 billion for more than 900 One Belt, One Road projects across 60 countries in gas, minerals, and other sectors. Adding to this, the government's Export-Import Bank of China is putting up the financing for 1,000 projects in 49 countries. Some examples. In Indonesia, the CDB has so far offered a 40-year concessionary loan with no government guarantees to finance 75% of the $5.29 billion Jakarta-Bandung Railway, Indonesia's first high-speed railway. Typically, the loans are structured as 60% U.S. dollars at a 2% rate and a 40% Chinese yuan at a 3.4% rate, and they carry a 10-year grace period. This is a huge risk to the Chinese banks, which already owe a lot of money from foreign, or owed a lot of money from foreign borrowers. The Chinese government is in a very difficult position. For years, their economy was fueled by borrowing and printing money for the purpose of building unproductive fixed assets that do little in the way of generating sustainable GDP growth. And now China's economic activity is expected to drop to 6.6% in 2017, according to the IMF, as the government attempts to rein in soaring prices in the real estate sector. The country's debt has already reached 250% of GDP. But the mirage of growth in China is being perpetuated by increasing the debt load and digging more holes. This time around, with the hopes of keeping the citizens placated and the current regime in power. However, adding to the tally of dollar-based loans at this precarious juncture is nothing short of insane. Central banks continue to hold the fragile global economy together by monetizing debt and propping up asset bubbles. Instead, what they are really ultimately building is currency, equity, bond, and economic chaos worldwide. But let me quickly now switch to what I've been anticipating, very, very important proprietary comments. So we all know that I'm kind of very, very cautious here and very negative about the long-term structure of the global economy, and there's a reason for it. Let me just go over very simply. Not that I am a negative person. It doesn't pay to be negative. I'm a person who likes to make money. I want to be on the reality side and skate to where the puck is going. The fact is that global debt is at a record, both nominally and in terms of GDP. And we have a massive distortion in asset prices that the central banks are in the process of correcting. They are in for yet another huge shock. There will be a massive correction in equities as the Fed continues its march towards interest rate mean reversion. Now, the dollar, the U.S. dollar, long-term bond yields, and most stocks have already rolled over in anticipation of the recession, and it's upcoming, and an end to the Fed's hawkish charade that, what is the charade? That it can actually ever come even close to normalizing interest rates. Let me give you some data points that you should know. As of March 1st through today, the S&P 500 is virtually unchanged. Yet, five stocks in the S&P 500, okay, five stocks, five out of 500, that's just 1%. Five stocks are up $260 billion in market cap. Again, five out of 500, 1%. And that means that 99% are down an equivalent $260 billion. This rally, this stock market ebullience and charade, this stock bubble is extremely narrow and extremely dangerous. Let me give you there's a plethora of economic data that I pull out on a weekly basis. And I can tell you all about the missed new existing home sales, the new home sales that missed estimates, the Richmond Fed, the Empire State Fed manufacturing surveys that missed, that shows there is no huge bounce in GDP. We were 0.7 in Q1, we'll probably be close to 2.5. Not really a bounce to speak of. And I think going out further, things look even worse with credit cards, student loans, auto loans, housing is in trouble. But let me give you one stat that absolutely proves my point. According to the American Journal of Transportation, completely bipartisan, non-biased source, American truck tonnage index, the American truck tonnage index is down 2.5% month over month from March to April. So March was the end of Q1, April's the start of Q2. The index, which was really creeping along, actually is now down month over month, 2.5%, and down even year over year. So here, let me get this straight. This is the tonnage index, not dollar value. The actual freight is down year over year and dropping pretty sharply month over month. That's a big move. So how is it that the economy can possibly be strengthening in that scenario? I mean, this is a great American index. Tracks tonnage across the across the nation. So if the economy was growing, wouldn't you expect that people are moving more goods through trucks? No. And there's no big watershed move to rail or ship. This is a great index, great indicator. It's been rolling over for a long time. The economy is not strengthening and it is not growing. And this index, along with others that I've mentioned, proves it. It absolutely proves it. And this is it. This is the challenge right now. The challenge now that I think I've pretty much proven over the weeks and months, and even for those who've been with me over the years, the economy is not getting much better. It's been held together by rubber bands, tape, and glue from the Federal Reserve. And that started to end December 2013, and we're getting very close to that watershed tipping point. The challenge is to safely continue to accrue dividends into your account while hedging against a downdraft with some gold, while we await for one of the following conditions to occur. And these conditions are coming quickly. A flat yield curve. If you don't believe me, look at the 210 spread, look at a chart. This is now well below 1%, 100 basis points, and in the 90s. We are quickly flattening the yield curve, and I'll have a lot more on that next week. That proves that we are just, at the most, a few quarters away, if not a few months away, from the chaos to begin. So I'm looking for a flat yield curve happening very quickly. Break-even spreads to drop significantly. A non-farm payroll report sub 25,000, which is accompanied by rising initial claims. Or a negative ISM, Institute of Supply Management, service reading. Any one of those will signal to me, and for your benefit, those who are clients, that it's time to exit all of your longs, all of your longs. And deploy your short hedges and increase your position in gold. Those are my triggers, I told you. Flat yield curve, break-even spreads, drop in NFP, initial claims, and the ISM. Any one of them. And the reason is because that is going to equal, one of those events will equal a collapse in the, not just a small drop. We already have the dollar rolled over. Put up a chart of the DXY. The dollar will take a huge leg down because it will signal a reversal of the Federal Reserve's monetary policy. Until then, it is best to exercise extreme caution, but continue to make money in aerospace and defense and dividends, and keep watching for those catalysts for chaos that I described. Because they grow closer by the day. I am fully prepared and ready to profit from the arrival of those conditions. So must you. Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500.
to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.